Welcome to Civil Discourse. This podcast will use government documents to illuminate the workings of the American government and offer context around the effects of government agencies in your everyday life. And now your hosts, Nia Rogers, Public Affairs Librarian, and Dr. John Augenbaugh, Political Science Professor.
Hey, Augie.
Good morning, Nia. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, I'm lovely, and I'm pretty excited because today I get to talk about one of my favorite government documents. In fact, something I probably spent like the last quarter century teaching and researching.
Tell the truth, you sleep with one under your pillow.
Not underneath my pillow, but I actually do have a pocket copy on my nightstand.
Okay, what we're talking about, of course, is the U.S. Constitution. And
I have one on my nightstand. I have one in my backpack. Okay, I have one at my office. I actually have one in my automobile.
Okay, Senator Byrd. he carried a Constitution everywhere and thwacked people with it when they didn't know what was in it. So... Speaking of what's in it, right? Like what I'm excited about for today's podcast, don't get me wrong. I like the Constitution. It's a lovely document. But I don't love it the way you love it. And that's probably a good thing. There can only be so much love for the Constitution in the world.
And again, let me repeat, the world does not need more people like me. Okay.
On a number of levels,
yes.
I would say.
Okay. But, on a number of variables, levels. Okay.
But what brought this about was actually was something you said on a podcast way back, which was you were explaining that people who say I'm going to take the fifth, like in television and movies, that is used badly because people say, I'm going to take the fifth when they are not, in fact, being accused of anything. You cannot take the fifth against self-incrimination, right? The I don't have to tell what I did or where I was, only if you're being accused.
That's
otherwise,
right.
You have to answer the question. If you haven't been accused of anything and somebody says, Augie, where were you last night? You can't say, I take the fifth. I mean, you can, but you will look like a chucklehead and the other lawyer will make you answer because you're not being accused of anything. It's so we had talked about that as this is something that movies get wrong all the time.
Yes.
And I said to you at that point, we should do an episode on stuff that got dissed, left out, and also stuff that people think's in the Constitution and isn't. Sort of a popular, what the heck is really in the Constitution? It's kind of like a lot of people think stuff is in the Bible and then come to find out it's Shakespeare or it's something else. Like it's not in the Bible at all. And they go, okay. Cause somebody said, well, I'm sure that's in the Bible somewhere. Right. Cause you know, that's what people say about the Constitution. Well, I'm sure that's in the Constitution somewhere.
And that's when I usually say, well, maybe it should be, but it isn't.
right. Okay. And I'm going to argue that you have read this document enough times that you would know. If I said to you, Augie, the right to eat feta cheese is in the Constitution, you'd be like, no.
No.
Okay. Maybe it should be, but it's not.
Maybe it should be. Yes. So do you want to go ahead and start with?
I want to start with the stuff that didn't make it.
Okay.
So and then I want to move to the stuff that
we think
should
it's
be
in there,
that we want to be in there, but isn't.
Really? Okay. So first, let's go ahead and focus on things that have been proposed for the Constitution, but have never made it in the Constitution, right?
And I'm warning folks now, this is likely to be a two-parter because there's a fair bit of stuff that was proposed at the beginning and then has been proposed over the years that's not in there. And then there's also a fair bit of stuff that we believe is in there that isn't. So... we may end up breaking those into two episodes. I'm just warning folks now. But so it's hot. It's the summer. They're writing the Constitution. Everybody's tired. It's Philadelphia. There's no air conditioning. And they just want to get done. And then you get the Bill of Rights, right? Because Madison's like, wait, we forgot a bunch of stuff.
Well, there's a little bit more to the Bill of Rights than that, right? Okay. So after the delegates to the Constitutional Convention met in Philadelphia in the hot summer of 1787, right? Then the Constitution was submitted to the states for ratification. That's where the debate begins, okay? And there were a group of individuals who did not like the proposed Constitution, the so-called Anti-Federalists. And one of their big complaints about the proposed Constitution was that there was not a listing of civil liberties that could not be infringed upon by the government, okay? And understand that there were some delegates to the Constitutional Convention who didn't think such a list was necessary because there were structural elements to the Constitution that would make it very difficult for the government to act, like separation of powers, checks and balances, right?
Right.
Alexander Hamilton was of that opinion.
We don't need to add all this other stuff.
Stuff because it is very difficult for the government to act, which we know is the case today, right?
Right.
It's difficult for both houses of Congress to agree to something. And even if they agree to something, the president could go ahead and say, yeah, thanks for sharing, but I'm vetoing it, right?
Right. Okay. Although Hamilton did not take into account, I would argue, executive orders, executive agreements, things where the implied powers in the Constitution of,
sure. Oh,
well, if we didn't enumerate it, y'all just go ahead and do that. I think, yeah. But also in Hamilton's, in fairness to Hamilton, he wasn't dealing with the size of government that we're dealing with now.
I mean, and we,
it's and, much and at smaller that time, level of government.
And at that time, there weren't political parties, right?
Right.
So, I mean,
the and they all fit into one room. Like they
so,
like,
you know, basically the assumption of most of the framers was that they were all unified, that they didn't like the British crown.
Right.
They were also unified because most of them at the Constitutional Convention recognized the Articles of Confederation were not working.
Right.
So the assumption of many of them was, of course, we will work together.
Well, right? And also, side note, not a lot of diversity in that room.
Oh, my goodness, no.
Right? So you have all wealthy, landowning, educated, like,
yes,
they
I
would
mean,
have thought, of course, we will we'll be civilized and we'll sit down and we'll have discussions and we'll argue until someone makes a really good point and then we'll all agree and move on. They didn't.
Yeah, because they had shared experiences,
right.
Shared knowledge. Okay, if you will, shared desires or expectations of what the government should do once it was formed.
Right. And one of the great things about diversity is that it brings different voices, but it also brings divisive, right? Like,
oh, yeah, sure.
By its nature, it makes arguments more argumenty. That's not a word, but you know what I mean.
More argumentative, right? More difficult because you have greater representation, you have more voices. Which means it's more difficult to get consensus.
Right. And it's a good thing because it brings lots of views, but it's a bad thing in the sense that it makes it harder
to get things done.
Right.
And again, those are trade-offs, right?
Right. Right. Okay. Exactly. But that room didn't have those trade-offs.
Yeah, they don't have that. Yeah.
They didn't have any voices of color. They didn't
color
have any voices
women,
of women. They
or,
didn't have
know,
any poverty. Like,
yeah, working
none of
class
that stuff.
Schlubs, okay,
yeah.
Who are
no,
like,
no.
You know, you
and uneducated or minimally educated.
Yeah,
all
right?
Of them were well-educated individuals. So
you guys
yeah.
are making reference to the Greeks and the Romans, okay?
Right. And
I want to know how this is going to affect my, you know, my farm.
Exactly.
Right? Or, you know, do I have to work 80 hours a week? Okay.
Exactly.
I mean,
how's this
going to impact me, right? Okay.
Exactly.
Narrow self-interest, right?
Isn't that what everything, whenever there's legislation passed, the first thing that any news organization does is put out an article saying how this is going to affect you.
Affect you, yes.
Because that's what most people, I mean, I'm not trying to be ugly, but most people with enlightened self-interest, that's what their first question is. Wait. Does that mean I'm going to lose or gain money? Does that mean I'm going to lose or gain position? Like what does that mean?
Yeah, how is this going to affect me, right?
So the
anti-federalists, they wanted a list of, if you will, civil liberties.
Okay.
In a number of states. That became extremely important for the outcome of whether the Constitution would be ratified. The Federalists, who were the supporters of the proposed Constitution, implicitly agreed that if the Constitution got ratified, the first United States Congress would look at a list of civil liberties, give consideration, and possibly approve them and send them to the states as amendments. And that's what becomes known as the Bill of Rights.
Bill of Rights is only the first 10.
The first 10.
After that, they're just amendments.
Yes, right?
Okay.
But when the first Congress met, they asked Madison, who was a member of the House of Representatives, to come up with, to craft these amendments. Now, we know the 10 that got approved. He proposed nearly 20. And of those nearly 20, okay, 12 made the initial cut, meaning that they were approved by both the House and the Senate. But the states only approved 10 of those 12.
Ooh, so which two got?
Very good question.
Got dissed.
Okay. So.
Now, wait, can we pause for just a minute?
Yes.
Madison was a brilliant writer.
Yes.
And a huge amount of the language in the Constitution comes out of Madison's head. Like it's.
Yes.
Just like Jefferson did a fantastic job with the Declaration of Independence. Madison's hugely behind the writing of the Constitution and the language in the Constitution.
Well,
because Madison was a great lawyer? Like, did he understand?
Well, he
was, was he visionary in the sense of?
He was a lawyer, but he was also a political pragmatist. I mean, because he was active in Virginia politics pre-Revolutionary War.
Ah.
He was active in politics during the Revolutionary War. He was active afterwards. I mean, he experienced a lot in his life. And also what's all very fascinating to me, when the Constitution was proposed, he was a Federalist. He gets into Congress and he has a transformation. He goes from being a Federalist to a member of the Democratic Republican Party that was very skeptical of the federal government's power. So the fact that he wrote the proposed amendments that became the Bill of Rights, is one of those, great transformations of an American politician. And in a very short period of time, right?
Okay.
So
he's like, let's rein this in a little bit. Let's make sure that we cover some really important stuff here.
So the two that the House and the Senate approved, but the states rejected, one was a restriction on Congress voting itself a pay raise until one congressional session has passed. Now, for some of our listeners, so basically, if Congress in a session gives itself a pay raise, the pay raise cannot go into effect until the next session.
But that is an amendment to the Constitution.
Ah, I was about to say, some of our listeners are like, hey, wait a minute, but that is an amendment. Yes, because it eventually got adopted as our 27th Amendment. It's our last amendment. It was approved in the late 20th century. And the reason why, fascinating backstory, kid in college in Texas in the 1980s is writing a term paper for a college class where he basically goes ahead and says, this amendment did not have a sunset clause. It did not have a clause that said, if it's not adopted by a certain period of time, okay, it ends. You cannot be considered. So he goes, technically, okay, this could be adopted. His college professor gives the paper a C. The kid writes.
Proof that college professors are often wrong.
Wrong.
I'm just saying.
The kid writes a number of state legislatures pointing out the fact that this could be adopted. And in listeners, in the United States in the late 1980s, early 1990s, there was a lot of anti-incumbent fervor in this country, right? I mean, this is the period of time where a number of states passed term limits,
right,
on elected officials, right?
Because people stayed for an eternity. So
you actually had very powerful members of Congress losing re-election campaigns because American voters, okay, wanted change.
Right.
And that's what happened. A number of states ratified what became the 27th Amendment.
You said it's our last amendment. It's our last amendment to date.
To date,
because
yes.
The awesome thing about the Constitution is that
it
we can
could
get
be amended
amendment.
In the future.
We can yes. get it. We could get a proposed amendment tomorrow. There's a whole process for that, and we've talked about it in other episodes, so we won't talk about it today. But it is possible to continue to amend. Okay, so Madison had to wait 100 years.
Well, almost
for that to be 200 years for that to be to yes. be ratified, but. They accepted. What's the other one?
The other one was basing the number of House of Representatives on the 1789 population.
Okay, so what is it based?
Well, it's based, it's actually Congress makes the decision as to how many House of Representatives there should be. The most recent time it was changed was actually early in the 1900s. Okay.
So it's probably due.
Oh, sure. Of course. I mean, that's one of the criticisms of the House, right?
Right. Is that now 435 people are representing 336
million
people, which yes. seems like probably too many one to ratio. The ratio is too high.
The ratio of of population to representative is too high. On
right.
the other hand, if you raise the number of House of Representatives,
if you doubled it, you have 870 members of Congress.
I mean,
they won't fit. They won't fit in the room. Like that's not.
Yeah, the House of Representative chambers would have to be renovated.
Oh my gosh!
Need a new one.
You'd have to have, it would be like college courses. Some of them would show up on Monday, Wednesday, and some of them would show up Tuesday, Thursday. And then Friday, they'd all zoom in with their votes.
Yes, you would.
Oh,
you would
my
have,
great googly mooglies. That would be a mess, wouldn't it?
You would have recitation sessions of the House of Representatives.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so, but yeah, I think it's probably a good idea for it not to be based on the 1789 census, considering we have just a few more people.
Yes.
Than we now, had then.
There have been a number of proposed amendments, most of which never get out of committee.
Are there more that were rejected initially? Do you have any of the 20?
I have that, but in a different research document, Nia. So you went ahead and stop me.
Okay? Oh no, it's fine.
Nia, right now, listeners, okay, has a very smug look on her face because she
with OSHA.
she was able to stump Augie on a podcast episode.
Yay. Okay.
Because okay, I went ahead, because I went ahead and crafted two Google documents for research, right? And I wanted to make the research document, the notes document, to be manageable for a podcast episode. So I left out a whole bunch of stuff from my other Google Doc.
Well, that's my fault then.
Okay,
so tell us other stuff that's rejected.
Okay, so listeners, proposed amendments to the Constitution are considered by Congress pretty much every congressional session.
Oh,
but
I didn't realize that often.
But most die in committee.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
We don't hear about it on the news because it doesn't make it out of committee. Because otherwise, that would be an interesting political. What I mean? Like, that would be interesting to know what Congress is thinking about changing.
Yeah.
But it probably would get people all up in arms and frustrated. So maybe it's a good thing we don't know.
And it's in some of them are just, you know,
crazy.
You know,
we want an amendment that deer hunting season always starts on September 1st and ends on.
Well, right, I mean, you know,
stuff
some
like
of it
that,
is,
or
know,
are they,
you know, changing the what's the word I'm looking for? Not the slogan, but the mottos.
Oh, e pluribus the mottos, unum.
Yeah, the mottos on currency, right? Okay. I came across that one, and I the logic was, most Americans don't know Latin.
Okay.
Okay.
Out of many, one, by the way, in case you don't know what E pluribus unum means.
Yes.
I don't know Latin either, but I do know that. And that basically means out of all the states, one united thing.
Yes.
Which
one
is
united country. The
United States, right?
States of America.
And on money, it's In God We Trust, I think.
Yes.
It's written on
and
the
by
money,
the way,
which I'm sure that there have been
a number of proposed
Congress
amendments to remove that. Yes. Yes.
To take God out of
yeah,
the
because,
equation.
Yeah, because it's been argued that it violates the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment.
Well, and it probably has been argued that in the Bible, God doesn't want to have anything to do with money.
Oh my
right?
goodness,
like,
no.
Money is a terrible thing. Yeah. Almost all the parables that involve money involve bad things happen to you
happening
when you have
people.
Lots of money.
Yes,
so.
if you idolize or cherish money
exactly.
in the Bible, something bad is going to happen to
exactly.
you.
Exactly, a dragon's going to eat your face. So I'm pretty sure there are dragons in the Bible. But anyway.
So there have been five that have reached the floor of the Congress, and Congress has rejected them.
Oh, right? Okay.
So, adding the Declaration of Independence. Oh, wait a minute here. I did include these. These are five proposed by Madison, rejected by Congress.
Okay, so these are five of the 20.
I did
okay.
bring this over from the other Google Doc.
I'm
Woo-hoo!
So glad. That's okay.
Yes.
So you haven't been in any way fainted, as they would say in fencing. So
well, I mean, hey, you know, I'm very humble. Okay, I frequently make mistakes, and there's plenty I don't know. Okay, so here are the five. Madison wanted to add the Declaration of Independence to the Constitution's preamble. He wanted
that would change the song a lot.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know,
because right now you can sing the song pretty quickly from Schoolhouse
Rock. Yeah,
you can
sing the preamble, right?
It just leaves out the one little.
Yes.
Right. We the people of the United States of America.
States of America.
Which it leaves
yeah.
out because that doesn't scan with the song. But boy, that would really change it if you had to add the whole Declaration of Independence. When in the course of human events. I mean,
you know,
that's it's a beautiful document, but it that's an interesting, I guess he wanted to what, pay homage to Jefferson, or he wanted to make sure nobody forgot the Declaration of Independence?
Madison's logic was the Constitution would be more powerful if it was rooted in the statement that led to the colonies breaking the chains of colonial oppression.
Okay.
However, his fellow members of Congress, okay, pointed out that it would minimize the powerfulness of the preamble, which, by the way, they spent a lot of time on at the Constitutional Convention.
His friends in Congress said, no, no, no. In 200 years, there's going to be a song and they won't be able to sing it if you sing put it, this yeah. on it. Okay, that would be really funny if they had said that. But no, I agree, actually, that doesn't, I think they're two very separate documents. Their purposes are very separate, right? The whole Declaration of Independence, we're done. We're done with England. Y'all go away.
Yeah, right? The Declaration of Independence is a list of grievances, right?
Right. And the Constitution, the preamble is
future oriented, right? Well, it's a mission statement for the new country.
Exactly. Right?
This is what we aspire to. So, you know, the Declaration of Independence is basically the kiss off letter to, you know, Great Britain, right?
But the preamble is sort of the too long didn't read of the Constitution. You know how you get emails where somebody will give you 18 pages of email and then at the bottom they say too long didn't read and they give you a one sentence synopsis?
Yes.
That's like a synopsis for the country. We the people of the United States and of America, in order to form a more perfect union, right? Like it says what we're going to do and how we're going to do it.
Yes.
I don't know. I agree with them. I think Madison was wrong on that one.
Another proposed amendment. Madison wanted to guarantee that three of the liberties in the Bill of Rights would be enforceable on the states.
Oh, now, the states cannot do these things? Okay.
They could not infringe upon the freedom of religion, the freedom of the press, and the requirement of a jury trial in criminal cases. And it was rejected. And the reason why is most of the founding generation believed that the Bill of Rights needed to be added to the Constitution, not to protect the people from state government, but to protect people from
federal overreach. Okay.
Yes.
Well, because in their experience, your local governor is much less onerous on you than the king.
King, that's right.
So in their experience, the king is more dangerous. You have to limit the king way more than you have to limit your local lord or governor or whoever.
And what this ends up creating, Nia, is we had a dichotomy in the United States until the 1920s, where the Bill of Rights, according to the U.S. Supreme Court, okay, were not applicable to state governments. So the states could basically ignore the Bill of Rights, and the Supreme Court would let them.
So the states could have had, a state could have chosen a religion.
Yes.
The state of Wyoming is going to be Catholic. And if you live here, you have to be Catholic.
That's right.
Okay.
Yes. Third, Madison wanted to clearly state in the Constitution separation of powers. Because maybe listeners don't know this, but the phrase separation of powers is not in the Constitution.
Okay, foreshadowing of what's not in the Constitution.
It is intuitive, right?
It's implied, right? By giving each of these different powers, you're implying that they have separate different powers.
That's right.
Okay. But you don't say separation of powers is a
guiding principle. Madison wanted to clearly state that, okay? He wanted to clearly state it. But again, his colleagues in Congress were like, yeah, hey, thanks for sharing, right?
Okay. Yeah, no, it's all good. We're good. They understand that from the reading.
Yes, right.
The reading of the text.
Yes.
And in fairness, a whole bunch of them were lawyers and did understand that from the reading of the text.
Yes.
Oh, well, clearly that's what we mean. It's one of those things where you've written it so you know what you mean.
Yes.
It might have been nice, actually, if there had been something in there that says, there will be a clear delineation of, but whatever.
And I can't remember who said this on the floor of the House, but they emphasized the fact that each of the first three articles of the Constitution start with different senses, right? So Article 1 starts with all powers herein granted. Article 2 says the powers of the president, okay? And then Article 3 starts with the judicial power of the United States. So the argument was, well, quite clearly, we are dividing the power of the federal government because we've started each of the three articles with different language.
Can I just note for the audience who cannot see you that you just named those three sentences from memory? I'm impressed by that. It makes sense to me that they were saying, we've pretty much clearly stated there are three different branches with three different sets of powers, and I'm not sure we need that. I like that Matheson, though, was like, we should underline it and put a couple of exclamation points, and they were like, yeah, no, you need to calm down. It's all going to be fine.
You know, if I was grading it and I was Matheson, I would use the highlighting function in Microsoft Word. Right. Okay. A fourth one. Matheson wanted a different version of the Second Amendment. He wanted to include a conscientious objector clause to the military service prefatory clause of the Second Amendment. So he wanted to clearly say that you could avoid being or serving in a militia for conscientious objector reasons. And it got rejected, which is one of the reasons why the five conservatives on the Supreme Court in DC versus Heller said that the opening clause, the prefatory clause of the Second Amendment, has no legal bearing on the right in the Second Amendment, because the United States Congress clearly rejected Madison's proposed amendment change to the language.
A well-regulated militia is the phrase that you're talking about.
Correct.
A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, which, by the way, is a terrible sentence. It's got way too many commas. It's ridiculous. This sentence,
and it's passive voice.
Yeah, this sentence should be taken out and shot. So anyway.
Oh, that
sorry.
Was bad. That was terrible.
I know. It's bad. So he's saying that somewhere along the line, he wanted a well-regulated militia, parentheses, unless you don't believe in being in a militia, in which case, never mind, parentheses, being necessary or something like that, right? Like, I'm sure he would have written it better than that because he's Matheson. But,
yes,
okay,
that's
so,
what he wanted
so
to add.
We don't, so then is that why it was illegal for people to be a conscientious objector for a long time?
Well, no.
Couldn't you be put in jail?
That arose because Congress, when it created the rules for the military, typically went ahead and wrote that it was illegal for you to object to military service because of your conscience. Okay, again, remember.
So an able-bodied male of a certain age was required.
Yes, yes.
To serve and if they didn't, then they could be. Right,
yeah, they could be jailed.
Because people have gone to jail for that, I think.
Well, I mean, for instance, when...
Didn't Muhammad Ali go to jail for that?
Yeah, I was going to mention the Vietnam War. Even the Persian Gulf War. There were people who were in the military, okay, who did not want to fight that war for various religious, moral reasons. And many of them lost their commissions or were... forced to accept discharges. And that was in lieu of being thrown into a military prison. I mean, because many Americans sign up to participate in the military to receive college benefits. It's part of the GI Bill.
Right.
But their assumption is we won't go to war. But then when we go to war, some of them are like, yeah, I don't want to fight in war. Well, according to the military,
that's what you came for. Sorry.
Yeah,
that's
you signed a contract to, you know, accept these benefits. Okay.
Right.
And it's a complicated issue.
It is complicated because it would also depend on the reasons for the war and where the war takes place and who you're fighting. Yep. I mean, you know, there could be some real concerns there. Okay. So they said, no, we don't want to make that. What is it? We don't want to make that amendment any clearer than it is right now. Was that their objection? Because they thought, because that amendment's a mess.
Of all the amendments,
the one that's just a mess language-wise is the Second Amendment.
Yeah,
it doesn't make any sense. It reads like it was written by a person who doesn't understand how to construct a sentence.
Yeah, it is usually one of the examples when I teach constitutional law that I give my students of how the language of the Constitution can really lead to interpretive difficulties.
Well, and I'm sure English professors everywhere pull it up and say, what's wrong with this sentence? And then 3 hours later, they it's not even about what it's about as much as that just doesn't make any sense.
Nia, that's funny you mentioned that because I had a high school English teacher who pulled up the language of the Second Amendment to show us why passive voice is a terrible way to write.
Right.
She pulled it up and said, this is an example of passive voice. And she showed us, and then she goes, so who can tell me what this actually says? And of course, many of us had not really read the US Constitution. So we were like, it's about being in the military, it's about guns. We're not entirely sure. And she goes, exactly.
There's so many subclauses in here, nobody knows which ones are sub and which ones are real. Okay, now, so number five.
But before we move on from you went ahead and said, you know, why was this rejected? And many members of Congress spoke to how the nation was founded on religion. And this goes back to something, Nia, you and I have discussed in previous podcast episodes. Most of the colonies were founded on a particular religion.
Right.
They left Great Britain because they wanted religious freedom from the Anglican Church in Great Britain.
Right. They wanted to be Lutheran. They wanted to be Catholic. They wanted to be,
Baptist.
Some denomination of Christian. We shouldn't say religion because it was Christianity. It's not.
And you know, Pennsylvania was Quaker, right? So many members of Congress, and again, this is the founding generation, right? So they were second generation colonists. So they had been born and raised into religious families in religious colonies. So this idea that somebody could go ahead and avoid military service for religious reasons was like unheard of. they're like,
Well, you fight for your freedom, you fight for your family, you fight for your country.
Yes.
Right. Like, and God will forgive you for what you do in.
Yes. And God will protect you on
the battlefield. In defense of those. Yes. Of those ideals, right? So I mean.
So the fifth one, Madison wanted to weave the Bill of Rights into the main text of the Constitution instead of just placing them at the end. And his colleagues persuaded him that would only make the reading of the Constitution more harder. Difficult.
Oh my gosh. I'm not trying to be ugly about Madison, but a lot of what he wanted to do would have made it a lot more complicated a document.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Right? Like, yes. If we had to search through that thing for the amendment, first of all, they wouldn't be amendments. They would be rewrites of the original.
Yes.
So you wouldn't have amendments anymore. But also, it's good that, I think it's good that they're at the end, because that shows.
I like that they're standalone, right? Because right. You read the main text, and then you have a discrete section, particularly the Bill of Rights, a discrete section that basically says, these are our civil liberties, right?
Well, and if you're not going to read the Constitution, at least read the amendments.
Sure.
At least yes. Understand what your yes. fundamental rights are, even if you're not going to bother to read the Constitution,
yes.
Which is fine. There are people who don't read the Constitution. I do not say it's fine. It's not fine. But you should read the Constitution if nothing else, so that you know what's in it. But
but
if you don't, at least knowing what's in the amendments helps you understand what, and we're going to later on get to things that aren't in there that you think are in there, but that's a different episode.
Okay, so what I'm going to do to conclude this episode is to talk about proposed amendments that have not been ratified by the states.
Okay. Oh, so this is now we're past the dudes in the room going, yes. No, James, no, we are not going to do. Do you think he went by James? Or do you think they called him like Jimbo?
I think he went by Mr. Madison.
Oh, okay.
This was a more formal time.
Okay.
If you read personal letters between members of the founding generation, their personal letters frequently started with, okay, my dearest Thomas, right? They were formal, okay? You know, whereas, you know,
my dearest Thomas, I was speaking the other day with General Washington.
Said yes.
You would have put his title and his last name as opposed to, I was speaking the other day with George.
Yeah, so Georgie and I were having some cider, okay?
So he would have been referred to as Mr. Madison.
Yeah.
Or if by his enemies, that damned Madison.
Yeah, that damn
Madison.
Or
something along that.
Or, you know, lines. When he became president, you know, that SOB president.
Okay. So, but these are later on, that like this is what we're now past the hanging out in Philly.
Yes.
Doing stuff. And these are things that the Congress has proposed. And then the states have gone, nah.
Yeah. The states have rejected them. Right.
Okay.
So the first one is in the 11th Congress, which was from 1809 to 1811. And this is an amendment, a proposed amendment, which I know you actually support. This is an amendment that would have voided U.S. citizenship if a person accepted a title of nobility or honor from another country.
Indeed. You don't get to be Prince John. For a variety of reasons, because Prince John is not the best prince.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, that's not cool. Americans don't have titles. We are not a, I will not say that we are not a country without classes, but we certainly don't use titles to separate ourselves from each other. That is not cool. And
yeah,
I mean, I totally agree with that. If you want a title, that's awesome. When Meghan became Duchess of whatever she is, I can't remember which it's not Cambridge because that's the other brother. But anyway, Sussex, Duchess of Sussex, she voided her right to call herself an American. British. You've sworn fealty to the British crown. That's awesome. The queen is cool. I like her. Go forth and enjoy your life. But you can't be an American if you're going to do that.
Yes.
I like that one.
Okay. The next one.
But the states were like, nah, we're good.
Nah. Yeah. We're
going to let people take titles. Yes. Huh.
The second one is pretty controversial. It was proposed in 1861 before the Civil War. And it was an amendment that would have prohibited Congress from interfering in state domestic institutions concerning slavery.
Oh, so trying to head off the Civil War.
Yes, it would have basically added to the Constitution the Supreme Court's ruling in Dred Scott versus Sanford. Because in Dred Scott, not only did the Supreme Court say that slaves had no legal and political rights, but the majority opinion also said the United States Congress had no authority to regulate the institution of slavery. So it would have clearly said that in the Constitution. And not surprisingly, can you guess which states from what geographical part of the country?
Oh, that cannot have been acceptable to the northern states.
Oh, the northern, no northern state, okay, ratified that amendment.
Right, because, yeah, abolition, right? It was already, and 1861 was too late for that. You might have been able to pull that off.
In the 59, late, maybe 60, 1860 before the presidential election, but not in 61.
Okay. Yeah.
1924. And by the way, these proposed amendments really highlight the evolution and change in our country. In 1924, there was a proposed amendment that would allow Congress to regulate child labor. This would have overturned the Supreme Court's ruling in Hammer versus Degenhart in 1918. And by the way, very few states ratified this proposed amendment, because in many states that would have forced a whole bunch of their industrial operations to change their labor practices. Yes.
But we eventually do get that. We just don't get it as an amendment, right?
We don't get it as an amendment.
We get it as a congressional law.
We get a law passed by Congress, okay, the Fair Labor Standards Act, which was deemed constitutional by the Supreme Court in the case of U.S. versus Darby, okay?
Okay. So we get it, but we just don't get it as an amendment.
That's right.
We get it as a public law.
Yes.
Okay. Really, it's a good thing. I'm just saying.
It's a good, yeah. I mean,
yeah. Here, 13-year-old child, work in this coal mine. No, I don't think so. That's a terrible idea.
Yeah. Work in this textile plant when you are, 12 years old for 60 hours a week.
Right.
Okay.
And make
that is not good. Okay. Right. The next one is pretty controversial. The Equal Rights Amendment was ratified by the United States Congress in 1972. Unlike the 27th Amendment, which was ratified by the states, the Equal Rights Amendment quite clearly had a clause that said the states had to ratify it within, I think it was first 8 years, and then the United States Congress in 1980 renewed it it was 5 years and then a second 5 years. And if the necessary number of states did not ratify it, then the amendment died.
Which, by the way, is three-fifths, right? Yes. It's three-fifths of the states have to ratify.
Three-fifths of the states have to ratify, right? And there's some debate about this, and we could do a podcast episode about it. But so when we get to the end of the second five-year window, the necessary number of states had not ratified. I think it was 35 out of 38. Okay. After that window.
So it sunsetted.
It sunsetted. Okay.
Oh, we're done. We have to. So that would mean that it has to go all the way back through the process again. Like it has to go
through the Congress and then go to the states again.
Okay.
Now, The Supreme Court's never ruled on it, never heard a case. I think three of the 35 states rescinded their approval.
Ah.
Three states, including Virginia, I think last year, ratified it. So there are now supporters who claim, well, 38 states approved it.
Oh, I see. But okay. Not all at the same time. Oh,
not,
that's
yeah, not question. Not within the, you know, the statutory window.
Right.
And then you got three, you know, again, three states rescinded it, and we don't know if states can rescind their approval of an amendment, right?
Oh yeah, that's a murky legal question.
That's a murky legal question. I agree. Question,
oh
right?
Wait, never mind. I've changed my mind. I don't agree. Like, yeah. No. You already said you were in. You already called dibs. We're not.
Yep.
Okay. So that would need to go to the Supremes to be untangled.
Yes.
Except now,
interestingly enough, the last two presidential administrations have issued legal memorandums where they have concluded. And notice I said the last two. So Trump and Biden have issued legal memorandums out of their office of legal counsel concluding that because the necessary number of states did not ratify it, supporters of an equal rights amendment will have to start at the beginning.
Okay.
Yeah. The last proposed amendment, and we've actually talked about this in a previous podcast episode, is Congress in 1978 accepted an amendment for the District of Columbia to become a state. And
is there a sunset on that one?
Yes, there was.
Oh, okay.
Which is why the United States Congress once again reconsidered DC statehood during the Trump administration.
Gotcha. But that one has never gone anywhere. I mean, it doesn't go anywhere once it gets out of Congress.
No, it doesn't go anywhere. I mean, because in part,
for all the reasons we talked about in that episode of,
yeah,
it's going to make things uneven, it's going to make things weird, then you have this state that's very small and takes parts of other states, and what part of it is actual state and what part of it is still federal, and I mean, there's a lot of drama.
There are a lot of issues in regards to DC statehood.
Yeah.
And though I'm very sympathetic to the residents of the District of Columbia, okay,
y'all should move to Northern Virginia. That's the answer to that question.
And then have Northern Virginia secede from Virginia.
It's right? Not like that hasn't happened to Virginia before.
Virginia. Yeah, that's how we get the state of West Virginia.
We could have Northeast Virginia.
Yes.
Right? And then we could just.
Well, I mean, hey.
They could call it Nova.
Nova,
which would be an awesome name for a state.
I mean, because most
51st state of the nation is Nova.
I mean, most of us who live in the Commonwealth of Virginia already refer to that part of Virginia as Nova, right?
That's right. Northern Virginia, Nova.
I mean, I don't know about you, Nia, but, you know, when I go back home to my home state of Pennsylvania and I drop in references to Nova, most of my family is like, where is this place you call Nova?
Yep. Right? Yep. My family does the same thing. What is that? Well, they don't need more because now they've gotten used to me saying it. Okay. So
we're going to conclude this episode. Our next episode, okay, is going to focus on things people think are in the U.S. Constitution, but are not.
And we will debate slightly whether they should be or not.
Oh, sure. I mean, because that's
because some things should be, but some things probably should not be.
Should not be, right? But nevertheless, that's again
part of the fun.
That's part of the fun. I mean, because you're talking about the country's governing document. So we should every once in a while ask, well, should this be in there?
Right.
Right.
Maybe we should propose an amendment.
Sure. All right.
All right. Thanks, Augie. We'll talk again soon.
All right. Thank you, Nia.
We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Civil Discourse, brought to you by VCU Libraries. Opinions expressed are solely the speaker's own and do not reflect the views or opinions of VCU or VCU Libraries. Special thanks to the workshop for technical assistance. Music by Isaac Hobson. Find more information at guides.library.vcu.edu/discourse. As always, no documents were harmed in the making of this podcast.